Hey folks, in this episode we will be talking about a character who is dealing with suicidal ideation. This is a comedy podcast and we may be making light of the situation. Comedy can be a way to deal with dark thoughts, but if you or someone you know is feeling up against it, please don't hesitate to reach out to someone. Call 988 here in the States or go to findahelpline.com. Needing help is not a sign of weakness, and we here at Lost on Lost want you to stick around. The world is a bigger place and a better place with you in it, and we love you.
Lost on Lost Season 2, baby!
Hell yeah!
We've watched Seasons 1, 2, and 3 of Lost, and we've learned a lot.
Did we?
And we've learned to love Jack, Kate, Sawyer, Boone, and Claire.
Did we?
But now it's time for Seasons 4, 5, and 6.
That's right, we're still going to talk about the mysteries and mythologies of the island.
And obviously hot tropical hookups.
But now we're going to talk about things like the freighter.
The others.
Charles Widmore.
The lighthouse.
Time travel.
9/11.
Ronald Reagan.
The Catholic Church.
Titus.
Gold Chains.
The military industrial complex.
The prison industrial complex.
The void.
The orb.
And so much more.
So strap on and strap down, because if you thought last season was confusing,
this is going to be so much worse. Or better if you like being lost on Lost. Strap on.
You heard me.
Welcome everybody to Lost on Lost, and happy St. Patrick's Day. This episode is actually airing in the middle of April, but we are recording it on St. Patrick's Day. I am joined as always by my Irish-Italian mutt brother, John O'Russell.
Happy St. Patty's Day to everyone except snakes and the English, or as I say, the English.
That's right. 26 plus 6 equals 1. Yeah, you celebrating? You said you were going to drink 3 beers before we started this, but did you get a chance to?
I had 2.
Okay, that's not bad.
They weren't green though, so I don't even know if that counts. Give me a minute. I'll go slam 3 beers real quick.
Yeah, welcome back, Lost and Lost faithful. We are joined by a returning guest. Fourth episode?
This is my fourth.
Fourth, yeah. Number four for good old Justin Nichols. Welcome back.
Yeah. Thanks for having me back. You know, I was thinking about this. You told me about this podcast 4 years ago, and then like 2 years later, I was finally on it. But now...
And now in 2 years, you've been on 4 times.
Yeah, so...
We made good.
Now you're sick of it. So,
no, I do have some follow-up from y'all's hiatus that you did, or your mid-season.
Oh, mid-season, sure.
Mid-season.
Okay. Yeah.
I have seen every single episode of Once Upon a Time.
Nice.
I watched the first 5 live when they aired, but then during COVID, my wife and I, we watched the whole thing.
Sure.
And this is really stupid, but Regina, the evil queen, her house is... address is 108, which is the numbers added together.
Oh shit.
So
that's amazing.
Yeah. So it's the most pointless thing I know. But I think about anytime I see your house, I'm like, that's the lost numbers.
The more pointless a piece of trivia is, the better I like it. The more I like it. Yeah. So that's really good trivia.
You said her name and I disassociated and started having a midday like fantasy because she's so pretty and
she's
it's
very,
frustrating.
Very attractive.
I'm not even looking at a picture of her and it hit me to my core. Anyways.
J-Bone, what have you been watching? Checking out?
Lately, you've been watching Shogun, really enjoying that. And also the perennial favorite, Vanderpump Rules.
Hell yeah.
I've watched that since the beginning. And
former guest of the show, Adam Haas, is a big fan of Vanderpump. Shout out Haas. Shout out Vanderpump.
Yeah. I feel like we're like a weird hive of people, all of us. Those who know.
Yeah.
And I've watched since the beginning. And like, I will say, it's like a document of elder millennial ennui. And like, it's incredible. I highly suggest like going from the start and watching it all. You've got like 15 years of like what it means to be a millennial and trying to make it in Hollywood.
And that sort of description of the show, like I was having this thought, I was doing like a little thought experiment with myself the other day about how like trash television doesn't exist anymore, because there's that gag, like every pleasure is a guilty pleasure if your anxiety is high enough.
Yeah.
So there's no such thing as guilty pleasure, because no matter what you're watching, it means something to you as the audience member.
Yeah.
And then just in one of our last recordings, Alex Tucci described Lost as sort of this character study with an element of magical realism to it, and all the stuff that I've heard. A thousand years, this is the same way somebody would describe 1,000 years of solitude.
Yeah.
And then you saying like Vanderpump is this exploration of millennial ennui, and it's like, it's true, there is no trash television. Yeah. It all means something.
It's cinema.
I don't know, man. Have you watched Love is Blind? I've been subjected to Love is Blind. That's trash television.
We just finished the latest season, and Yeah, I have thoughts about that, but we can save that for a different podcast.
Well, and I've been watching Yellowstone, and I'm like, this is trash television because I can't stop watching it, but this is real, real bad.
Yellowstone is trash television.
but Shogun's awesome.
Shogun fucking rips, though. Do you guys want to talk about Lost?
You guys want to talk about Lost?
Might as well, right?
Oh, man. Well, today we're talking about Dr. Linus, and not just the person, the episode. Dr. Linus originally aired on March 9, 2010. It was written by Edward Kitsis and Adam Horowitz and was directed by Mario Van Peebles. Mario Van Peebles,
that's right.
Actually.
Yeah,
MVP.
Yeah, so if you go on his IMDb, well, once I saw his picture, I was like, is that the guy from Heartbreak Ridge? It is the guy from Heartbreak Ridge, which I was very excited about. But he's done a lot of acting and directing, like single episodes of television. I mean, he's done a lot of movies too, but where his IMDb credits, like it blends really seamlessly into shows that he's worked on, shows he's acted in. He's done quite a bit of stuff, but I believe this was his only episode of Lost. Dr. Linus is the 7th episode of the 6th season of Lost and the 110th episode overall. We're getting close to the end here, boys.
We've seen this half of season 6 at this point.
Yeah, exactly. And it takes place on the 7th and 8th days after the crash of Ajira. Wait, hold on. It's 316?
Correct.
Okay, I have to think of Stone Cold Steve Austin. Right. That's the only way I remember it.
Ajira 316 says, we just crashed into your island again.
Jane Austen 316. Adam, do you have a recap?
Yes.
Let's hear it.
Richard can't come on the Black Rock. He has to be invited. On the island, everyone at the temple is dead. Let's not go there. Let's go to the beach, where everyone is definitely not dead. Walking, digging, and talking. The price of admission covers the whole seat, but you'll only need the edge. And in the other time, a time very similar to this one, but not necessarily better.
Yeah.
Everyone has a new job, except for Arst. Dr. Linus is protecting the future by being a public school teacher. Who cares? Is this Ben's hero arc? Please, my father is Mr. Linus. Call me Dr. Nerd. It's Dr. Linus here on Lost on Lost.
I wasn't sure if I was just, I was driving home. I wasn't sure if I was writing the intro or you're writing the intro. So I just wrote a joke that I'd like to just preview right now,
absolutely.
If you don't mind.
Yeah.
Some people are extroverts. Some people are introverts. And some people are just perverts. Because this student-teacher relationship is problematic.
It's fine.
Sure. Sure.
We'll talk about it.
Yeah.
He's a mandatory reporter.
Yeah, that's the first thing I thought. That's the first thing I thought. Anyway.
Where do we start in the jungle?
Yeah. What I lovingly called the present.
Yeah, right.
Because I thought I was pretty sure it was, but I wasn't 100% sure. But yeah, but we start off on a high note. Ben's running away from somebody or running to somebody. I think it's both, but he doesn't know where he's going. I think he's looking for somebody and just is happy to find somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nighttime. He's running. He's scared, obviously. He catches up to a group of moving torches, which turns out to be Alana, Miles, Frank, and Sun, the survivors of Ajira 316 that did not travel to the past. They remained here in 2007. He's like, oh, thank God. And they're like, where'd you come from? And why don't you have Saeed? Look, we're happy that you're alive or whatever, but where's Saeed? Saeed killed everybody, Dogen and the interpreter and everybody at the temple, and Ben saw it and lived. And he's like, let's not go there. And because they can't go to the temple, they decide to go to Survivor Beach, which nobody's been to in a while. We cut to the flash sideways, our first flash sideways of the episode. Ben is
a fucking nerd.
Correct. He teaches world history or European history, one of the two. Whatever history would cover Napoleon.
It's not fair to history. Like, friend of the show, Nick Brandel's a history teacher. He doesn't dress like this. Nick Brandel dresses like a maniac. And I love
that. He dresses like a literal clown.
Does he have a PhD, though?
I don't think so. Yeah. Unless a college gave him an honorary one because of how dope he is.
PhD's nuts.
So Ben's teaching history. Principal Reynolds observes, played by William Atherton.
Yeah, the man's made a career out of just being a penis.
History club is going fine until Dickless here fessed with the schedule.
Right, exactly. It's just
is this true?
The yes. worst. And he this does it no so dick. Well and so effortlessly. He's so tired in this episode and it just works.
Ben loses his ability to supervise advanced yeah. history club. He's got to supervise right. detention, budget cuts, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Later, he's having lunch with Dr. Leslie Arst in his final chronological lost appearance.
Love to see that they keep finding ways to get him back in. It's so good to see Arst.
Yeah. And they just kind of have a talk about, you know, maybe change the leadership here. You know, if things aren't going, you know, great. You know, or that they're just kind of grousing about it. They're just kind of complaining about how, like, administration, it, you know, doesn't necessarily, they don't remember what it's like to be an educator. You know, it's like, and I think that probably ends up being true, especially the longer an educator becomes an administrator and the longer they are an administrator, I think it's hard to not get detached from it. So
I also noticed Ben labeled all of his food, even his soy sauce had BL written on top of
what
it.
What a dork.
But then I was like, what teacher actually has their lunch in the teacher's lounge? They usually
keep it in their
room
so that nobody snatches it.
Yeah. I also, it seems like people would steal it. Like, clearly, like, people stole Ben's food is probably...
Right, that's why it's labeled.
The principal.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's absolutely fucking Principal Reynolds eating all this shit. Yeah. But so they're grousing about the administration, and then a substitute teacher at a nearby table by the name of Mr. Locke says, "Sounds like you care about this place. And if the man in charge doesn't, maybe it's time for a change."
And they're like, "Aren't you just a substitute?" And I was like,
"Right." Also, I'm sorry to, because I know the show and the characters have all developed over time, right? But like, at this point, regardless of whether or not the crash has happened, Locke is still the sad sack having a complete mental breakdown with a phone sex worker pretending to be his ex-wife. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And here he's just like, "Fucking topple the patriarchy." And I'm like, those two characters are incongruous. Like,
I mean, and we haven't seen this yet, but the reason Locke is a substitute teacher is because he got fired from his job at the box factory. So his life's still kind of depressing.
Right. But he was so timid and so, like, all he wanted to do was play his board game with his buddy, you know, at the lunch table. And now he's like, "Fucking, you know what you need to do? Start a revolution, brother." And I'm like, no, that's latter day Locke. That's, you know, that's not OG Locke.
Well, and the truth of these flash sideways will come into stark relief in like a year or two, but but it is, I think it is interesting how they, you know, they framed this splash sideways as a world in which 815 landed safely,
yeah,
and everybody just kind of proceeded with their lives. So everything that we saw in the flashbacks in the first three seasons, that stuff all still happened,
right?
Or did it
Cut to the present. Alanis tries to get Miles to find out how Jacob died. And I found this interesting because, Justin, you may not be aware of this, but here on Lost on Lost, we recently saw the episode, like three episodes ago, in which Miles' powers were explained. And he said it doesn't really work if you don't have a body, but he's able to very easily communicate with Jacob's ashes.
Yeah.
And discover that Ben is lying about what happened to Jacob.
Right.
He's like, "I didn't kill Jacob." And it's like, "Well, the ashes say you did." And it's like, "You can't listen to ashes. Ashes don't know shit."
It's also interesting, I mean, just from like a production standpoint, like almost every time we see Miles do his thing, there's no like visual effect.
No,
you know what I mean? A little bit of an auditory thing, but there's no like flashes and editing and all this stuff. It's just kind of Miles sitting down doing his thing, which I'm like, I mean, it's a cheap way to do it. And like, it's
they should
fine.
Have that so Ravened it. Keep it in the Disney family.
Yeah. That's kind of really all that happened here. Ben's like, "Yeah, this is what I saw." And then Miles was like, "Nah, Ben killed Jacob." And that kind of pisses Alana off.
Yeah.
She was already suspicious to begin with, which is interesting. I don't know why she's suspicious. I mean, she's just suspicious of Ben for whatever reason.
I forgot Alana existed until I watched this episode.
JP forgets she exists every time we do a new episode of the show.
If you would have given me a multiple choice test just now as to what her name was, I would not have guessed Alana.
A, Son. B, Frank. C, Alana.
Is it Frank?
Yeah, it's Frank.
Frank the pilot.
I love that Frank never
takes off any of his pilot shit on his shirt.
Yeah.
Like he leaves on the pauldrons and the pins. And
yeah.
He's proud.
Or those epaulets.
Not all of us can be pilots. Yeah, that's, you know.
The lost card comes up and we proceed to the next thing. It's morning. The beach. Alana's group arrives at the wreckage of
Survivor Beach.
Yep. And they get organized. Hey, look for food, tools, get some tarps going, whatever. We're going to be here for a question mark amount of time? Like, let's
Ben's still trying to sell it. Like, yeah, wacky guys.
You can't try. Like, he's just doing some of that cold reading shit that, what's his face, Jonathan Edwards or Winters or whatever is real. Yeah.
And, like, season three, Ben might have been able to, like, pull some shit. This is season six. Everyone knows what Ben's up to. You know what I mean? Like,
the funny thing about it is in the Lostpedia recap or the synopsis of the episode is that generally they're not super like editorialized, but like sure. In every instance in which Ben lies in this, the recap has been editorialized kind of to just say, and Ben says something to Alana very unconvincingly, and they like add this very unconvincingly to like every time Ben speaks. It's like, oh, okay. I mean, yes, but geez. But yeah, he's not fucking pulling it off. She just straight up ignores him. She's like, no. One of the things that she said in the previous scene was like, Jacob was the closest thing I ever had to a father. So it makes sense that she is upset.
She's a little perturbed.
Flash sideways. Back to
Ben's making dinner.
He's making dinner for himself and for his father, Roger. Roger is still around. Roger is...
Alive.
Roger, yeah, he's not drunk. He's a little curmudgeon-y, but like, you know, he's no more so than any other older dude that I've ever met. Like,
yeah, but you can tell he appreciates his son's help. Like, they've actually managed to have some sort of amicable relationship.
And this goes to the thing that you said, Justin, about the history prior to 815. Did it happen the way it had happened? Because prior to 815, Roger had blamed the death of his wife on Ben's birth because his wife died during childbirth when Ben was born. And he blamed Ben for that, and that's why their relationship was always so horrible. Here, it doesn't seem like he has that color to their relationship, so you have to wonder,
well,
did Roger get over it, or did it not happen like that?
I think this shows that it's different, that like even the prior to 815 crashing, things are different because Ben didn't kill him in 1992.
That's true. Well, but they did still go, because Roger does mention, he's like, this isn't the life I wished for you. I'd kind of hoped that going to the Dharma Initiative was going to be a step forward for both of us, and it didn't end up being that. Roger had been let down by the Dharma Initiative, so they did still go. And the reason they went is because Mrs. Linus died. Right. So did she still die, but does Roger have a different viewpoint of how it happened?
Maybe so.
Is he thankful that his son was born as opposed to being resentful of his son?
Right. And then you also have to ask, like, was Ben ever introduced to Richard and the others or the hostiles or whatever we call them in that time? Because the reason as an adult that he murked everybody was, you know, partially an influence because of the hostiles, right? And Jacob and like everything else that's going on the island. So in this alternate timeline, was he never introduced to the other
inhabitants? I feel like he probably wasn't, because I mean, he went to grad school, you know, like he had all this time. And so like
they just went there, camped out.
I wonder if they went there like, this is kind of weird.
They got there, you know? And then Roger immediately got the workman job. He's like, I didn't come all the way over here to be a fucking janitor. I quit. And then they just leave. They're there for like a week.
Yeah.
Hey, pushing brooms and honest living, man. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, hey, you know, world needs ditch diggers too. Yeah, you know, maybe they weren't there long enough for baby Ben to get shot by time traveling Saeed and then being sent to the hostiles to be healed. All this shit that we haven't seen, but we've heard about.
Just a quick side note, Roger's old age makeup's actually pretty good.
Yeah, it was pretty convincing.
Turns out they're using young makeup prior to...
Yeah, John Grease was 95 years old when Lost was first on. There's a knock at the door. Ben goes to answer it, and it is Alex Rousseau. She is a student of his.
Why does she know where he lives? Why does she know?
I went to a high school in a small town. I knew the home addresses of a handful of my teachers, the ones that I was exposed to the most.
Yeah, maybe they live in the same neighborhood.
Yeah, they might just live nearby to each other or something like that.
It is a little weird.
It is a little strange. I mean, even though I knew where like some of my teachers lived, I never went there unless they were friends with my parents, which my mom was a substitute teacher, and that's kind of the reason why I had any sort of contact with any of my teachers outside of schools, because my parents, whatever. But yeah, I thought that was a little odd. It's, again, as the show goes on, there is nothing nefarious or sinister about their relationship
that were shown.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
No, yeah.
But it is a little odd. It's a little it is a little strange. I don't know.
We're looking at it through the
lens of our real lives and our real world in which horrible shit has been done to children by authority figures, teachers, fucking priests, scout advisors. I mean, so we have this cynical view of this type of relationship and with reason, I think. Like, it's not out of nowhere.
Right. And I don't want to like dwell on this too much, but I'm going to continue to dwell. I feel like we're giving this situation a pass because in another timeline, she is his, for lack of a better word, daughter. So we're like, he truly just loves her, you know, because, you know, they are star-crossed, like,
yeah, like is
souls
love,
that are meant to be together.
Yeah, is love universal? Right. Like, yeah. is a question that you could ask here. It's like, no matter what timeline, no matter what reality Ben and Alex have.
Right.
And maybe she is just legitimately the best student he's ever had, and he's like,
yeah,
I gotta get this girl out of this small town.
Yeah.
You know, right. if it is a small town. Do we even know where it's supposed to take place? Where is Arst a substitute teacher? Where is he from?
I mean, not
a substitute teacher, but, you know.
The high school is called Washington Tustin, so maybe it's in Tustin.
Okay.
Where the hell is Tustin?
It's by Santa Ana.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's like, it's greater Los Angeles area-ish. Yeah, it's south of Anaheim. In between Anaheim and Irvine. Oh, she's mad that, or she's not mad. She's just like, what happened? We're at history club. And he's like, I didn't put a note on the door. I have to supervise detention. And she's like, I got to get into Yale. I need to do AP tests. And he's like, instead of just saying, I'm still at school after school, just come to the detention hall and I'll tutor you there. He's like, right. I'll tutor you before school because I can't apparently do anything during detention except supervise detention.
Right. Like, if you want kids to not fuck up and go to detention, make them part of the history club. Force them to participate in history club.
Yeah. It's like, I'm going to be tutoring history during this detention. If y'all can pay attention if you want to or not, but these kids are actually here to learn. I don't know.
Right.
Two birds kind of thing, but whatever. If they want to come to school at fucking 7 a.m., fine.
Right.
Couldn't be me. History club's canceled. She's going to be tutored in the morning. Good stuff. Come back to the beach. Son is obviously still looking for Jin because they're not together.
It's just like, have you seen my husband? No. Shut up.
He's around here somewhere, probably. She has a conversation with Alana, and Alana's like, I need to find your husband too. And Son's like, he's hot, right? And she's like, for sure.
Yeah. Like, stupid hot.
But beyond that, his last name is Kwan. Your last name is Kwan. I might need to protect both of you, or maybe just one of you, and I don't know which one. So for now, I'm going to protect both of you. And Son's like, why do you got to protect us? I'm a crack shot with a pistol, and my husband beats people to death with his bare hands for a living. We don't need protection.
Right, yeah. Have you met my dad?
And she's like, I have to protect you because it's my job to protect the candidates. What candidates? The candidates to replace Jacob. There we go.
That's a big, it's a big thing.
Big reveal. If we were watching this in order, we would have been asking, what are the candidates? What are the candidates? Yeah. What are the candidates? I think we've asked it once. I think it's come up once. And we've got the answer. The candidates. Anytime they mention the candidates, they're candidates to replace Jacob. And apparently it's going to be a little bit more important now because Jacob's dead.
Frogert's in the back just going, it's an honor just to be nominated. I was on the plane. Does that count?
Elsewhere, Jack and Hugo wake up in a field and they're like, let's go to the temple.
This is such an odd episode. Like, it's like, it was, this is a better episode than the last episode y'all had me on for, because y'all had me on for like arguably the worst episode.
Oh yeah.
The best episode.
Yeah. The history of Jack's tattoo.
Stranger in a Strange Land.
But this episode, like, it was really hard for me to get invested in it, which I found interesting because, like, I haven't seen this season since it aired.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, it's so hard. But then, like, I actually found the Jack stuff to be the most interesting part of this episode.
Kind of.
And, like, I'm used to his stuff being, like, when I'm on y'all's show, I'm used to Jack's stuff being the irritating, annoying stuff.
Like, annoying in there.
Yeah. And this one, it's, like, straight up unhinged Jack and unhinged
pretty good.
Richard Alpert.
Yeah.
Who, I remember looking this up when it aired. He has the same name as the spiritual leader Ram Dass, and
who is a member of the forefront of like the acid revolution.
So I don't think that ultimately meant anything to the show, because John Locke is a philosopher,
just
like, and
characters after philosophers and important thinkers and stuff like that, but it's not like, oh, John Locke is a parallel to the real John Locke. And saying, it would be funny though if Richard was just like, why is he always acting like that? Oh, he's on acid a lot. Like, he eats a lot of island mushrooms and that's why he's like that. Yeah, Jack and Hugo need to go to the temple. Hugo doesn't want to go. He kind of is stalling.
Yeah, he was taking a nap. He wants to eat lunch or breakfast or whatever, you know. Like,
I wrote here, I had noticed it earlier, but it happened again in this scene. It had happened enough times now at this point that I needed to make a note of it. The music in this episode is not quite whimsical, but it is more lighthearted than I thought that it should be for the content of the episode.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
We're talking about, like, recently a bunch of people died. Like, there's, you know, all this other stuff that happened. It's like, I feel like there should be tension here, and the music's a little bit sort of springy.
A little bit more bouncy.
But then there's still, I know this jumps ahead, but you still got that, like, Michael Giacchino, like, moving strings when everyone's reunited. You just get those feels.
Yeah, for sure.
Richard comes wandering in, and he's like, hey, I'll take you guys to the temple. If you're trying to go to the temple, that's where I'm going. Let's all just...
It's that way.
Yeah, it's this
Both
way.
Both you idiots don't know which way you're going. It's this way.
Yeah. He was like, let's go that way. Jack's like, it's over here. And Richard's like, no. But Jack's on board, and Hurley's like, do you trust that guy? And Jack, well, at least he's not stalling.
Right. Clear. You have zero poker face. Yeah, so I'm going to listen to him.
Cut back to Survivor Beach. Ben is rat fucking Sawyer's tent. It has to be Sawyer's tent because it has all the reading material in it.
Got jugs.
No, it's called Booty Babes, not jugs.
The B spot. Big, bouncy, beautiful buns.
And Benjamin Disraeli's Justice and Truth in Action, which is not a real book that he wrote, but it is a quote that he said, justice is truth in action. I tried very, very hard to find justice in truth in action. It's not a book that he wrote. So it's just a fake book based on something he said, I guess. Unless my 45 seconds of Googling wasn't enough. So, shout out in the comments if that's a real book, if you're a big Benjamin Disraeli fan. The father of modern English conservatism.
Also, if Booty Babes is an actual publication, shout out in the comments, because I want to do some research. Anyways.
We find out here that Frank is the Lost Universe's Seth MacFarlane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which begs the question, what would Mark Wahlberg have done on flight 815?
Oh. He would have held the plane together with his bare hands, and it would have landed safely in LAX.
Mark Wahlberg would have prayed about it very intensely.
Exactly, and he would have done it with the power of prayer.
The Tailies would have made it.
I love
Mark Wahlberg.
Frank's look so much, because, like, Sawyer's also got, like, the same length hair, and Sawyer, they always make sure that he's got volume and that his hair's coiffed perfectly or whatever, so that when it's blowing in the wind, it looks good. Frank, they're just like, leave it out in the rain. Like, he just looks like a wet, shaggy dog, and I fucking love it. His shirt's always half undone. Like, it's beautiful. It's just beautiful.
Frank Lapidus is, I've said it before, I'll say it again, probably my favorite, tied for my favorite addition from the freighter. Him and Miles, I love them so much.
Yeah.
Because Frank's over it. Like, from the jump. Even when he first arrives on the freighter, he's just like, I'm here because they needed a helicopter pilot. I don't really give a shit about what's going on. Like, I fly the helicopter. So if you need to helicopter ride somewhere, let's go. And he just flies people around in helicopters. So at this point, Alana comes over with her rifle.
Now she pulls a gun on him.
Before, when Ben was, like, trying to, like, minister a defense for himself, she was just kind of ignoring him. She was collecting the things she was going to need to tie him up and force him to make his own grave.
Yeah.
That's why she was ignoring him. She was busy. She's done that. She's gotten a makeshift rope and a makeshift clamp.
What's funny, though, is, like, Jeff Fahey doesn't even react. Because, like, it's like a single shot, like, I think, if I recall correctly. Like, it just pans over, then she's there with the gun next to Ben's face, and he doesn't react at all.
No. He's just like, guess that's what's happening next. And
yeah,
just
like, not my problem.
Ben, it looks like you're not going to need that Booty Babes where you're going. So if you wouldn't mind slipping that over, and then you can go home with Alana, and I'll see you later.
I got to go look in the jungle for some stuff.
Real quick. I'll be right back. But yeah, she takes him over to the graveyard and forces him at gunpoint to dig his own grave. It's pretty brutal.
Yeah.
Flash sideways. Ben and Alex are studying in the library in the morning. None of the lights are on. It's real weird. Like, it's morning at a public school. Turn the fucking lights on.
Right. Yeah. Now, there was another student that walked through the frame, like, in the library, which I feel like they were like, we have to have someone else here because otherwise this looks suspect.
Yeah. And even with that person in here, it still looks suspect. Turn the fucking lights on. This is the point in which Alex is like, talks about the inappropriate shit that's going on at school. Like, she's, right. she's struggling and she's having a hard time, and he tries to get her to focus, but she refers to Principal Reynolds as a pervert.
Right.
Yeah. Ben's a mandatory reporter.
Yeah.
I used to be a mandatory reporter. I used to work at a school. If you're an educator, if you're a supervisor of children in a professional capacity, you're almost always a mandatory reporter.
Yeah.
You don't say, yes, I'm going to keep this between the two of us.
Yeah.
You're like, right. if something has happened, I have to tell somebody. You don't say, you don't even say, I'll keep it a secret and then do it anyway. You just say, I'm going to tell somebody.
But it was an act between two consenting adults that was going on. So I guess it's like
That's a little different. But he did, before she explained what the thing was,
he said,
don't worry, I won't tell anybody.
I thought it was the other way around.
Whatever.
No, I think you're right. Yeah.
Because that's the thing that bothered me about it was she was like, he's like, pervert, did something like, and then she was like, you can't say anything. It's like him saying he won't tell gets her to tell him what it actually is, and then he is relieved to find out that she is not being molested.
Yeah, at least there's nothing going on with the kid. It's two adults. It is,
just two adults behaving inappropriately in front of in front of children. Accidentally, they didn't realize that they weren't alone, but still gross.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is what happens when Flight 815 doesn't disappear.
Yeah. So it should have happened.
Well, Alex gets to go to Yale and is very much alive, so...
For now.
Yeah.
But yeah, Principal Reynolds banged the school nurse in front of Alex on accident.
I mean...
Not in front of.
Right. Didn't be like, okay, we're going to do it and you watch. Like, she was in the room. They didn't realize she was there.
Maybe he flashed sideways, huh?
Anyways,
cut to Ben digging his own grave and just doing a real shit job at it. See, it's really taking his time, not putting his back into it, not lifting with his legs at all, just kind of like, I'm pouting because I don't like doing manual labor.
I love the fact, though, that they had to dig so many graves that they invented a shovel out of a bamboo log.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
We are getting real sick of digging graves with just bits of fuselage and our bare hands. Can somebody make a shovel? And somebody, probably Saeed, was like, yeah, I got that.
Yeah, give me 30 seconds.
And yeah, just leave it by the graveyard. I'm sure we're going to need it.
Yeah.
I must say, if this is the right part, when it happened, I loved when Miles mentioned
the diamonds,
Nikki and Paolo.
Yeah, because Ben is like...
And I was doing some math, and that amount of diamonds comes out to about 400,000 in Bitcoin.
Yes!
There it is.
Yeah.
I just have a post-it note next to my computer that just says $400,000, fit it in.
Ben bribes Miles. He's like, cut me loose, I can get you $3.2 million, which is exactly the amount of money that you wanted in the first place to not come here. I can hook it up. Not that Ben would know that, but coincidence and everything. And then Miles is like, why would I do that? I'm straight up off screen gonna go dig up $8 million worth of diamonds out of Nikki and Paula's graves.
Miles is just in it for the money, baby, and I love it.
That's it. Oh, like Alana's like, keep digging. And Miles is like, my bad. Sorry. Yeah. I didn't mean to distract him. I'll leave.
What does he offer him for food? It's something disgusting.
Green beans and bananas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, what kind of green beans are they growing?
Right.
They just happen to be beans that are green.
Cut back over to the jungle. Richard, Hugo, and Jack get to the Black Rock.
Which, I mean, let's talk about how exciting it is to have the Black Rock and Arst in the same episode.
I mean, love it. Two great tastes taste great together.
Excellent poll. Excellent. Richard's like, oh, remember when I said I was taking you to the thing? Psych. I'm taking you to Black Rock because I need some of that dynamite.
He needs to eat the olives because he's allergic to olives.
Yeah, it's the only thing that can kill me is olives.
But yeah, that's why he wants to be here. He tells the boys that he now believes his life has no purpose because he spent his life dedicated to Jacob, who gave him this gift. And now Jacob's dead. And Jacob, before he died, did not impart on him the grand plan. And so now he's struggling with pointlessness and he wants to kill himself.
Right.
But he can't.
It's like being alive for all this time has not been great.
And that's I do like that. It's something that people struggle with in real life is like you lose a sense of purpose and then you struggle to find a reason to carry on.
Right.
And so as the character of Richard, that's just
Richard's
really cool.
Richard's becoming an avatar for the writers of the show.
Well, and Richard, I mean, he has spent potentially thousands of years working toward this plan for Jacob that like he's really only got little pieces and fragments of. And now Jacob's just gone. He's like, it's not even like a, I mean, yes, it's a depression thing, but it's not like a, like I'm weeping, sobbing. What am I going to do?
And that's the, I think the interesting distinction is it's not depression. It's a loss of purpose.
Yeah. Right?
Because depression is the thing that, you know, generally people struggle with over time and stuff like that. Like all of a sudden a major depressive episode doesn't come out of nowhere and then drive somebody instantly to suicidal ideation. But a loss of purpose can do that, because that is something that can be a sudden onset. And that's why I think that was an interesting distinction.
Yeah, he's just tossing his hands up and saying, fuck it.
Like, what the fuck? Where do I go from here? The Olives.
I'm so sick of this. I'm so tired.
He says, though, part of the gift is he can't kill himself. So he's going to ask Jack or Hurley or both to kill him. He's like, I can't do it. You got to do it. So in the background during this scene, Hurley is just like, freaking out. He's like, we know how dangerous all this shit is. And Richard's just like, I can't kill myself. So he's like throwing dynamite around. He's like, look, if I do it, it'll be fine because I can't kill myself. But so he puts a wick in a stick of dynamite. He asks Jack to light it.
That doesn't happen quite yet.
Oh.
They just have the conversation.
Then there's a commercial break.
Yeah, then we flash sideways.
The flash sideways to Arst. Arst is in his office grading papers, and Ben comes in and asks Arst to help him expose Principal Reynolds and his indiscretion.
Principal Reynolds already exposed himself, am I right?
Thank you.
But yeah, he's basically like, hey, can you do that computer hacking? It's TV computer hacking. Like, can you get into somebody's email, a faculty email?
Because you're a science teacher.
Right.
Yeah. Fucking nerd.
And ours is like, yeah, I'll help you since you're making a move, you're making a play, toppling the regime and all that, like Mr. Locke said. But I want a sweetener. You got to kick in a little. I want a better parking space. And at first I was like, you idiot, ask for more. And then I was like, oh, wait, it's just a public school. No, that's fine.
Yeah. But then he's like, I want better equipment. I need my class to be funded.
I want aprons and textbooks that were printed in this decade. And
yeah.
Like, right. Yeah. Which the only thing he's asking for himself is something that is basically free. Everything else is for the kids. Yeah. I'm like, way to go, Leslie. Fuck yeah, let's go.
And yeah, it's like here. It's like, okay, well, Leslie cares too. He's just more of a dick about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we got some teachers here who care. They're protecting the youth and future of America.
And as somebody who has to fight several thousand other people for parking during the week, you know, at my job, like, I get it, man.
Yeah.
Having a good dedicated spot up front. Whew.
Yeah, ours agrees because Ben says yeah. Yeah, we cut to the beach again. Ben just digs. That's my next note. And then we cut to the Black Rock. And this is where Richard talks about his disillusionment with the plan and how he's going to blow himself up.
Yeah, he spills the beans. This is how it's going to work. I can't die. I need you to do it. So here, I'm going to give you all the pieces together. I need you to light this fucking stick of dynamite. You should probably run quickly because there's a bunch of other fucking olives in here, and olives tend to lead to other olives. And thanks for coming along, because I'm pissed off. Jack's like, gotcha, fam. No worries. Like, here we go. Wick, light, everything. And then he channels his best, like, season 2 lock and just sits down. Like, all right. Now's the time we're going to have this conversation. I was like, oh, yes, unhinged Jack. I like this. This is great.
This is probably my favorite scene in the episode.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, it's so good.
Yeah, we cut briefly to a commercial, and we come back continuous in here. And Hurley's just like, Jack, what are you doing? He's like, I'm staying here. I'm going to talk to Richard. We're going to have a conversation. And then Hurley has a very funny line. Well, if you change your mind, I'll be like a mile away. And yeah, Jack sits down and he tells him about an experience we have not seen here on Lost on Lost, but we will when we watch the episode The Lighthouse. Jack was shown a lens at this lighthouse that showed him that Jacob had been watching him his entire life, mm-hmm. and that there was something important and there was a reason and there was all this. So he explains to Richard that even though Richard didn't get the answer that he was searching for and he feels like his life has loss of purpose, it doesn't. The plan is still in motion, whatever it is. It's just Richard hasn't been exposed to it yet, but Jack says, I want you to believe that the plan, whatever the plan is still going.
Right. Plan's still on, baby.
Yeah. And I'm going to prove that by showing that I guess I can't kill myself either because I'm the one who lit the dynamite. I'm staying here and I believe in the plan. I believe in what Jacob told me. And so I don't think that we're going to die. And the fuse burns down to about an inch and then extinguishes.
Yeah. Again, I just, for how much shit, it, you know, people grow characters grow, for how much shit he gave Locke for believing in the island, you know, and what's the whole, you know, why do you find it so easy to believe? It's never been easy, you know, like that whole conversation.
Yeah.
And now here he is, literally, like,
full on.
He lights the dynamite and he closes his eyes at one point. He's like, this is it. Like, yeah. It's either going to stop and this all means something. This all has some sort of design. Or I'm willing to not see the end of it.
Yeah, he's become, in the late part of Lost here, the man of faith.
Yeah.
That used to be the fight, the struggle between the man of science and the man of faith, Locke and Jack. Now Locke's no longer around and Jack has taken that over. And I think he agrees with Locke at this point that, you know, why do you find it so easy to believe? It's never been easy. Jack realizes that, no, believing isn't easy because everything that he's gone through up till this point hasn't been easy. It's been struggle. It's been all this stuff. And so,
yeah.
So he has faith now and his faith is rewarded by not exploding. And then, so like a byproduct of that is... A byproduct of that is that Richard's faith isn't fully restored, but it is rekindled because Rich is like, oh, okay, shit.
Well,
what's next?
Let's try 2 out of 3.
Jack
says, another wake.
You want to do another one?
Yeah.
Let's do another one. Huh? We're here.
You want to get nuts?
Let's get nuts. Cut back over to the beach. Ben is still digging. He's almost done. He's squared it off. It's not deep enough.
He's really squared it off. He's milking some time there.
Yeah.
He hears the smoke monster noise. Hypothetically loud enough for everybody to hear, but he's the only one who notices.
Yeah.
They're over by the ocean.
Yeah.
The waves are crashing. Yeah.
They found Hurley's Walkman just listening to fucking Bahaman.
You know that's track 6. Right after Damien Rice and Willie Nelson, the Bahaman. Yeah. And yeah, Flock appears.
Yeah. Always with the backpack on. Is there a reason? Nah, we'll find out.
I mean, he got it. He's got shit he's got to carry around. You know, there's
the big booty magazines. It's just all in there.
But yeah, he's basically like, hey, what you doing, bud? And Ben's like, I'm digging my own. Fuck, what does it look like? Come on, man. She's going to shoot me because you told me to kill Jacob and she's a little upset about it. Women, am I right? And he's like, don't worry about that. She's just probably on her period or something. Listen, I'm going to magic undo your leg shackle. There's a gun. It's just past a copy of Jugs in the jungle. The jungle Jugs. And you're going to get the old dropsies on her. I did this for you, my old
buddy. As long
buddy.
As you run faster than you actually end up running.
Yeah. Yeah. And I set this all up for you, bud. You again, you're in control of your own life. It's definitely not me.
And if you do all this, the job of Island Protector is yours. The thing that you wanted, the thing that you thought Jacob was going to give you, I'm going to give it
to you. It's almost as if there's a theme to this episode.
Huh. Sounds good to Ben. Ben bails. He waits until Lana's looking at him.
Yeah.
Like, she looks at him, he looks at her, and then he runs. Like, he could, like, look at her, then keep digging, wait till she stops looking at him, and then go and get more of a head start. But he doesn't do that, because it's TV, I guess. I don't know. Yeah.
Hey, Locke, why don't you bring me the gun, and I'll just shoot her from here.
Just set the gun down. Why'd you leave it over there? Flash sideways, Dr. Linus confronts Principal Reynolds. Check out these emails.
Yeah.
I know you're banging the nurse. You're going to tell the school district that you want to retire for health or whatever reason. You're going to recommend me for the job. The funny thing is that they hold you in such high esteem, even though you're a pervert, is that they'll listen to you and they'll give me the job.
Yeah. And Reynolds is like immediately like, oh, would you? Yeah, well, I'm gonna fucking hit you with the Uno reverse. Oh, you're gonna try and blackmail me. I'm gonna blackmail you. I just got a letter an email asking me to write a letter of recommendation for your favorite student who we all know you have an inappropriate relationship with. She knows where you live. So wouldn't it be a shame if I fucking roasted her ass and made sure that she never got into Yale or Princeton or whichever one of those fucking Ivy League school she wants to go to.
What a dickhead.
Yeah.
That said, if Ben would have said, I don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah, cooker.
There's other schools. Yeah. There's even other Ivies.
Her. This is about me and my career.
She could have gone to Cornell.
She could have gone to fucking Pepperdine. It's insane. Like...
DeVry, ITT Tech, let's go. All those predatory places.
They were still around in 2007.
She could have come to Oshkosh and gotten loaded with us.
Hell yeah.
Anyways, cut back to Ben Dude, Ben gets the sloppiest jump on Alana. She has him line of sight. Yeah. She lets him pick up a gun, point at her, and she goes like, oh, no.
They're in pistol range, and she has a rifle. Like, she could have just lit him up.
And she's got an M1 carbine, baby. That thing's got no recoil and a big magazine capacity.
There's just one bullet in it.
Missing the firing pin. It's that. It's Robert's rifle. Ben or Alana has Ben at gunpoint, and Ben reverse Uno's her drop on him by getting the drop on her, and asks to just for a moment to explain himself. And he monologues here a little bit about.
Well, he had just won.
No, keep going with the other one. Keep saying the action of soliloquy.
He monologued.
He had just won an Emmy for playing Ben the season before. Yeah,
that's true.
And so
he's looking for a repeat.
I think like he and
Terry O'Quinn.
They were both nominated against each other for this season for Best Supporting Actor. And like,
oh really?
Terry O'Quinn had won like I think 2 years prior, and then Michael Emerson won the like season prior to this. And you can see why.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, his whole speech about like, what about me? Like that whole thing is like, it's so good. Like when he has something to work with, Michael Emerson absolutely knows the assignment, but like,
yeah. And yeah, his speech here is he explains his version of dedicating his life to Jacob and not being rewarded and all that. And then he finally gets down to the point. He's like, so if you don't kill me, I'm just going to go to him. And she was like, why would you go to him? Well, he's the only one who will have me.
Right.
Just, yeah. In tears. And it's like, wow. And she's like, well, I'll have you.
She's like, you're clearly a broken man.
Yeah. Yeah. You've been through some shit.
This is really like a precursor to Barbie.
Benergy.
He's Benuff.
Yeah.
Benuff.
You're Benuff.
Yep. Flash sideways.
Yeah.
Ben chose Alex.
Yeah.
It's almost like there's a theme to this episode.
In the 815 timeline, he did not choose Alex. He chose the island.
Yeah.
Right. Here's my problem, though. It's a misdirect, right? So it makes it look like Ben's moving into the principal's office, right?
Yeah.
You get the feeling like, I'm going to, you know, clean up around here. He's looking at all the dude's tchotchkes, shit like that. Then Alex comes in and is like, oh my God, I got such a glowing recommendation. And it turns out that Ben was just like handing over some reports or, you know, the detention list or some shit.
He pushed back a little bit. He caved to Reynolds, but he's like, all right, I'm not going to turn you in, but let me do history club. And he did it in front of her.
Yeah.
And Reynolds was like,
I think Reynolds wrote the letter anyway. I don't think Ben had anything to do with it. The letter of recommendation.
Yeah, maybe.
Alex is that good of a student.
Yeah.
But I remember how I strong-armed you into getting someone else on detention because you said it in front of a student. It's not like you said it in front of the superintendent of the fucking school board or whatever.
And that's why I wrote, he pushed back, but just a little. He's like...
But maybe Ben said to him, Alex heard y'all in the room next door.
Yeah, maybe it was like, all right, I'm not going to turn you in, but students know. So fucking lock it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, she got the great letter. Everything's back to normal. We come back to the beach. Alana and Ben come back. There's a little montage here of them sort of just like getting situated. Ben helps Sun build a tent. Frank tends the fire. Miles inspects his newfound wealth. Alana sits with Jacob's ashes. And then from around the reunion shrub comes Jack and
the
Hugo.
Reunion shrub.
And the music.
Yep. And because this is the first time that they've seen the 316 survivors that didn't time travel since the crash. It's only been 7 days for Son and Frank, but it's been longer for them.
Yeah, it's however long
they were like, in the 70s and whatever.
Yeah, right.
The disco era.
Yeah. So yeah, big hugs. All this stuff. It's really great. Everybody's happy to see each other again. There's this really cool wide shot of the main six, Alana, Jack, Hugo, Son, Frank, Miles, and then Richard and Ben bookending them on either side. Still outsiders, but now part of this group of eight people. And then K-19, the Widowmaker's watching them.
I think they were like, well, we got to get this shot anyway. And they were like, well, we already got this really cool shot of them from out in the ocean.
Let's use it without the filter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, boss, there's people on the beach. Should we stop? No.
No.
Just go.
Idiot.
proceed.
And they're like, yeah, what? We've guaranteed you this episode. We're putting you in it.
Boss, there's fish under the water. You want me to open the window and cast a reel?
There's a Dharma shark.
Oh, God.
I see plants and coconuts.
And so, yeah, that's it. That's how the episode ends. Charles Widmore is here.
Charles.
He's finally made it.
Yep.
Charlie.
Good for him. What a glow up. You know?
Alan's dead.
Manifesting his goals.
Dr. Linus, lost. Ladies and gentlemen.
Did we like it? Was it good? That's what we need to consider up front. You can like some things that are ass, some things that are really good you don't care for. Did I say that correctly?
You can like some things you don't care for, and things that are bad can be good.
Yeah. So what do we think about Dr. Linus?
Justin?
I think this is just an okay episode.
Yeah.
I like, there's stuff I like, but like it was so, it's like an A, B, and C plot, obviously, just like inherently Lost is always at least an A and a B plot. But I didn't really care for the A plot that much. And then the C plot was the most interesting, but it's hardly there.
Mm-hmm.
And then the B plot was okay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like it was weird coming into this after, like, I've only seen this episode once before. I suddenly started as I was watching it, I could remember it a lot better than I expected to be able to. But this made me think about JP and how he's going through this whole series and how like this has to be such an odd episode to see, because this is the first time I've felt a little lost on Lost.
Sure.
Watching stuff with y'all. And yeah, I think it's just an okay episode. I don't think it inherently does not stand on its own in any way.
Yeah.
Other than the flash sideways.
Yeah.
So yeah.
That works.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Totally fair.
JP.
Yeah, it's kind of, it's meh, teetering on no for me. The Flash Sideways Ben story is like a complete story, you know, it's encapsulated, yeah. Whereas the On the Island stuff is just between, you know, Ben and digging the grave and what's her name, Alana, like that is such a short interaction that is just stretched out and stretched out and stretched out over 2 days. And it's like, get to the point. The Richard Jack Hurley stuff, love that. That was great. That was pretty entertaining. But Adam, just like you said, the we look at the Flash sideways through the lens of today's world, you know. So like, I get real skeezy. Like anytime there's a student teacher relationship, there's that new Marty Freeman movie coming out, Miller's Girl, that is just like softcore porn. Like,
yeah, it's a teacher, smut. It's a teacher student inappropriate relationship movie. Yeah,
right.
With Jenna Ortega and Marty Freeman.
Episode was another 30 minutes long. It just wouldn't turn into that. So I'm gonna say it's a meh because sure. I did it. Enjoy Richard's little dynamite sojourn. So
cool.
Adam?
Yeah, I think it averages out to a meh for me because I enjoyed The Flash Sideways because, yeah, it is a complete story, kind of an interesting story, a different version of Ben. So that's like, that's okay. The Jack, Hugo, Richard stuff, very good. And then the rest of it, not good.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It averages out to a meh for me. That's how I feel about it. I was very entertained by the Black Rock scene. Very, very good. And yeah, it was.
Yeah.
3 minutes of the episode.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, there we go. So yeah,
cool.
And meh, kind of a meh, some good stuff in it, but couldn't out muscle the bad.
Well, speaking of good stuff though, we do have to hand out a good boy or good girl or good concept award to the Lost MVP. Justin, who is your, you know the deal.
Yeah,
you know
the
spiel. This is your fourth time on. Who's your Lost MVP?
It sounds weird, but I think Jack.
Sure.
Of this episode was my, just because kind of unhinged and not, you know, like we all want to be at that point in our life where we're willing to sit down with a lit stick of dynamite.
And no,
it's not going.
Or at least 95% no.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. I like that.
He's kind of like a youth pastor driving a group of high school students in a bus because. With reckless abandon.
You know? If only we'd have sat down in the chair backwards.
Yeah.
Excellent. JP?
Arts. Before Miles, before Frank, we were relegated to side survivor characters, and I didn't realize how much I missed him until I saw him.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And who's sorry, I'm going to go on a complete tangent here. Who's the fat kid from Harry Potter that might actually be the chosen one?
Neville Longbottom.
Neville Longbottom, sure. Yeah.
Like, Neville gets a bad rap because, like, as far as kids go, he's like a little heavier set and he's kind of a nerd and he doesn't know how to do stuff and he's not cool or whatever, you know. But like, he could be the chosen one. I want there to be one more candidate and it's Arts or Froger or Scott or Steve or someone that they never considered. Like, I want it to be Arts so fucking bad just to be this, like, it's an every guy. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
I enjoy seeing him on screen and he's got to get one more MVP in.
Fair enough.
Adam.
Yeah, Jack. I'm agreeing with Justin. I really liked what he's doing here. I liked his character development. I like that from where he was, this is where he's at now. I think that's really good. And I just really liked it. He drew, I couldn't look away from him in this episode. So Jack, yeah. It was no contest for me for Jack.
It's one of the few times, I think, on Lost on Lost, he's never done anything annoying. He's actually pretty fucking dope.
he was a little short with Hurley, but not egregiously so.
As far as how Jack can fly off the handle, he was very reserved.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, speaking of reservations, we do need to give a reservation to the Lost Forever. Who was the worst? Who sucks shit? Who was not as cool as Neville Longbottom or Jack? Justin, start us off.
I think Alana, but then like she kind of redeems herself there at the end, but she's just kind of like,
sure,
I don't know, just the way that she was handling the whole situation. Yeah. I don't think she was full on in it. Sure. You know, good for her for accepting Ben there at the end. But yeah, I don't know, like maybe that's her, because like Jeff Fahey's just cool.
Yeah,
you know. Yeah. Just kind of. And then Miles is cool because he can talk to dead people, and then everybody. Yeah, so I think it's Alana, but it's not like a full-on, like, she's the absolute, like, nobody's the absolute worst, because
right, the bar here for who is the worst is still pretty high. Like, Alana's, from your pick, yeah, she's bad, but like nobody was real bad, so you just got to pick somebody.
Like, she did the right thing there at the end, you know, like, sure. But it's just like
nobody fucked up all the way.
Yeah,
but she came close.
Yeah,
she there was a moment right there at the end where she could have fucked up the whole way and didn't.
Yeah.
Gotcha. That's fair. Yeah. JP.
I'm also going with Alana. I understand this is not a lot like the actor's fault because she's given nothing to work with, but do something interesting or get the fuck out of the way. You know what I mean? Like, make a decision, do something. I just, every time I see her character, she's just kind of like, something's gonna happen. Something I need, you know, she keeps stretching shit out rather than making things happen or not happen. And I'm just like, fucking get out of the way for characters I do give a shit about. So,
sure.
Can't wait until you blow up. Adam.
Yeah, you guys nailed it. You guys said everything that I need to say or would have said. So that's it, Alana. That's our first triple crown, Lost Forever for season two.
Woo! Couldn't have happened to a nicer guy. I love how the principal, the fucking pervert principal, gets away.
Actually, no, that's not our first triple crown. Technically, Radzinski got a triple crown in the second episode of the season.
Oh, okay.
So this is our second triple crown for Lost Forever.
All right.
But yeah, unbelievable that William Atherton got out of this one. Unbelievable.
But I think it's because he's like,
he's supposed to be the bad guy.
He's doing a good William Atherton. Yeah, you know, exactly. You're like,
he's doing his thing.
Cool. All right. Well, that's it. Lost Forevers, Lost MVPs. Did we like it? Was good. Bases covered. Justin, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me again. I feel like if we're going to keep counting down money,
you got to come on three more times.
Come on three more times. So.
You got anything you want to plug?
Yeah, I'll plug my usual thing, Brent Renaud Foundation. Sure. Want people to check that out if they can. Means a lot to me, especially when I see weird conspiracy theories start to get thrown around that I think is active Russian misinformation. So it's kind of weird. But check out the Brent Renaud Foundation, brentrenaudfoundation.org. It's to help emerging filmmakers and journalists tell their stories. They do have a bent where they try to help emerging filmmakers and journalists from underrepresented communities learn from other people. They have great mentors for people to learn from. And I highly recommend that.
Cool.
Well, and if you do see weird Russian headlines about me,
they're true.
I did do that shit.
Yeah. So, it's propaganda, but it's true.
Yeah.
So...
Before we sign off, I want to give a quick belated birthday to my darling co-host. His birthday was just a few days ago, and text him because he was in the middle of shooting a mech at some unknown army location with his camera. So,
wow. And my phone didn't work anyways because I was smashed the screen. I had to only communicate via my smartwatch for a week.
That was pretty hilarious. Gross. Receiving a voice message from you saying, I'm recording this from my watch like Dick fucking Tracy. But yes, happy belated birthday to JP.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm 37. My back hurts.
Word. JP, what are we watching next time?
I am so fucking excited. If you are looking to be lost with us next time, we're going to be watching season 4. Thank God. A little bit of season 4 going on. Episode 5, The Constant, starring Desmond. We are bringing back Jacob Oller. He wrote a paper about this in college. I think The Constant was probably the most requested episode by guests. Multiple people had said, I want to do The Constant, and we promised it to Jacob first. And I know that I don't know a goddamn thing about this episode. I just know a lot of people, this one stood out to them.
It's good, but I've heard somebody had to watch it in college. Somebody told me a story who had never seen Lost before, and they're like, why is everyone obsessed with this episode?
It is is pretty widely regarded as the best episode of Lost.
Yeah.
But by Lost fans.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
I think you'll really like it, though. Like, you're so knowledgeable stoked. Enough at this point that it will be good. But yeah, I've heard, like, if you're not a Lost fan, that's exciting.
Yeah, but yeah, I'm pumped. This should be
good.
We
are Lost fans, and hopefully our audience is Lost fans. And we want to thank all of you for tuning in to our ridiculousness. Adam, thank you for always putting up with my ridiculousness. Justin, thank you for counting the numbers down with us once again.
I mean, we're like a podcast with three guys right now talking about crypto, so...
To the moon, baby. Diamond hands.
If you don't have a Ferrari, what are you even doing with your life?
Yeah, exactly.
Y'all, early I get up the night before.
Yeah.
I start grinding.
Grind set.
Yeah.
JP. Do you have any idea what's going on this show?
No.
No. No, I agree.
Lost on Lost is produced and edited by me and JP.
We wish to acknowledge that we live, work, and produce our show on occupied land.
Burbank, California is located on the traditional tribal lands of the Tongva, Chumash, Keech, and Fernandinho Tataviam peoples.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin is located on the traditional tribal lands of the Peoria, Potawatomi, Miama, and Ho-Chunk peoples.
And Lost was produced in Hawaii on the lands of the Kanaka Maoli.
Visit native-land.ca to learn more about the land you live and work on.
You can engage with us on IG, Facebook, and Twitter at LostOnLost1.
You can also email us at wearelostonlost@gmail.com or support us with dollar monies at ko-fi.com/wearelostonlost.
Thanks to Lostpedia and its community of contributors, Danny Schmitz, random.org, and as always, you the listeners for tuning in.
We're hosted at Podbean. You can hear us there or wherever you get your podcasts, except MySpace. We're not on MySpace.
Yet.
Ha 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 ha